Welcome to the Minute Maid Gang Podcast, episode 249. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Hey, good morning.
Graham Thickens.
That's got me jumping, baby.
And Phil Wilson.
Jello.
How you doing?
Just great.
Awesome. Good. Sitting here on a snowy morning in lovely Lakeville.
Yeah, we do have a lot of snow.
We got a lot to clear when we get done with our podcast here.
My wife has already been up and done it. So.
Oh, you lucky dog.
Yeah. You know why?
Because you were sleeping.
Well, no, not that. No, I'm always up before everybody else. But no, I think what she did, she went outside with a shovel in hand, and a neighbor with a snowblower saw her, came over into the... So it's like, you know,
funny. That's nice. I got to try that.
Yeah. She wooed the neighbor to snow blow the yard.
Yeah. And now they're all judgmental. All the neighbors are talking about that crappy husband, Phil Wilson.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Well, they were doing that before, so it's okay.
Oh, God. Well, I'm wondering if the Twin Cities is a promising tech hub. Graham, yes, what do you think, buddy?
I do, and it's finally being recognized by some dude I've never heard of and at a site I've never heard of called techie.com. Not techies with an S, which has its origins here in Minnesota, but techie.com. Had you heard of that guy?
No. Who found this link?
I did.
You did? Cool. Yeah, I'd never seen this before.
Yeah, no, I saw this, and I said, this is a Minovate talking point right here.
Well, and it was actually
waiting to happen.
Yep. They talked
about hundreds of cities applied, and we're one of the top 10 here.
Yep.
Yeah. And our friend Don Ball was quoted extensively. The story is really more about Cocoa than anything else.
Yeah. I was going to say it is a very big Cocoa ad. So that's all right.
Yeah. But, they're talking about data visualization and Minnesota healthcare IT.
Yeah.
And
all the meetups.
Right. And you know, there is a lot going on here.
Yes, there is.
We just need a Google.
And this is
something like that.
Well, the Google Entrepreneurs Program, you know, we're a Google hub or whatever they call it, or Cocoa is.
A tech hub, yeah.
That's what really got us on the map for that story, probably.
You know? And the Upper Midwest represents here with Sioux Falls also on the
list. Right. I like the Sioux Falls connection. That's very nice.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, if I lived down in the southwest part of Minnesota, I'd be tempted to go move over to Sioux Falls just to save sales tax or the state tax.
Yeah,
my God.
Well, you know what I really think
capital gains
that,
and everything.
What is the key to the whole tech? You know, this promising innovation city is the fact that this is where Minovate was born. So,
exactly.
Yeah. We were on the cutting edge of. What were we on the cutting edge again of?
Well, 2008. February of 2008.
Blogging, then podcasting. Yeah, people don't realize how long ago we go back with this name.
That's right.
But, the great thing is that being the tech hub, we also get our share of black hat stuff. So, and another great week for Target, kids.
Oh, man. Yeah, the hits just keep on coming.
Man, that's just not letting up. Tim, you're the eye on retail. How's it impacting the bottom line at Target right now?
Oh, it's not good. It looks like that, their sales were down quite a bit over the holiday period, but it's going to continue to get worse. Just from anecdotal, if you just go into a Target, it doesn't look as busy as it used to be. And, it's more and more revelations seem to come out. And this week it's... they haven't really hardened their systems from the 2005 hacks that they had.
Right.
And that the point of sale system was compromised, and that the data that's on them is unencrypted. And that's still okay, by the PCI standards, because they're transmitting that data over their private network. If it has to go through the internet, then it has to be encrypted, but it doesn't on a private network. But it just made it easy for the hackers to run a RAM scraper on the point of sale systems, and it collects that in the clear open data.
Yeah, it hits memory.
Is this RAM scraper of which you speak a physical piece of hardware? Is it? How do they basically get between the POS pad and the server by which it's connected.
That I'm not clear on. I think that they injected malware into the system. It's what it sounds like from what you're reading, but it's not super clear exactly how they did it.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Intentionally to some extent.
Yeah, probably not. So.
Well,
yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why a lot of people, when they sell laptops, you know, they talk about not only wiping the hard drive, but also clearing the memory, because there's latent leftover data in the RAM. And mm-hmm. and so, you know, this stuff, when you're swiping your card, it's going into the memory in that little terminal before it's sent to the register. And, you know, it's just milliseconds, I'm sure, but they're scraping it from there. Mm-hmm. Yep. And it was a 17-year-old.
Yeah.
Brian Krebs, the guy that broke the original story, actually did a couple of, we'll put links in the show notes, you know, first look at the target intrusion. It's a little techy, a little geeky, but it does talk about some of the stuff that they're doing to try to figure out who it was and exactly what happened. And they identified this kid over in the Ukraine.
He's a Russian, but he's in the Ukraine, right?
Right. And he's done a lot of, he's written a lot of malware. And apparently this particular malware has been out for quite a while, right, Tim?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's years and years. So that makes Target look even worse.
Well,
they knew about this for at least 6 years, longer.
Probably longer, because there was a white paper that was basically distributed to Target management, as I recall from one of those articles, right?
Yep.
Oh, boy.
So it was like, yeah, this is broken. So, you know, we talk about this 17-year-old or younger, you said younger than 17, and, you know, and this ability to get in between the point of sale pad and you know, getting access to this. Doesn't it kind of remind you of, I don't know if you guys are a fan of this movie, of War Games at all, with Matthew Broderick?
Matthew Broderick, sure.
So, and it's like this sort of, this advanced version of phone freaking you know, going after all of this data.
Huh.
Are you guys all right?
They're not doing it for fun, though. No. He's doing it to make money.
Lots of money.
Yeah.
If you guys, have any of you been?
Yes. I closed my card because Target contacted my bank and said my debit card from the bank was one of the ones compromised.
Well, right. And my wife and I, we canceled our debit cards the next day.
Right.
So as soon as we found out, and then our daughter's red card was compromised. So good. You know, I'm going to put a link in the show. I know that we've talked about this ad nauseum, and there's lots of links and all that, but there is a Target page up that's the response and resources related to Target's data breach, and it's on their corporate site. Mm-hmm. And I'll put a link in the show notes, because there's also a linked in there to a free credit monitoring report that you can get. They'll pay for a year of credit monitoring. And I strongly recommend everybody just do this.
Yeah, and they're doing that for anyone who shopped at Target in the last year.
Right.
I don't know how they prove that, but...
Well, that's pretty much everybody in the Twin Cities area.
Yeah, on the planet.
Yeah.
Or in the U.S. I'm thinking of doing it, even though I didn't shop during the period in question.
But do you...
Where do you buy your G-string underwear, Grant?
No, it's my
Elf. Where do you get your banana
hammers and stuff? No, I don't go to Target that often, but I did, and when I do, I use my check card. So I'm thinking maybe I do want to change that check card, even though I've not gotten any emails.
Seriously, change it. I mean that sincerely.
So how likely are people to go to a site that's put up by a company that is dealing with a big data breach? How many people are going to be enthusiastic about going to that site and entering their data so that they can get free credit monitoring?
It's interesting you bring that up, because this morning in the business section of the Tribune, there's a story that people aren't responding to the email blast that Target's sending out to the 70 million. They're saying they're dubious about clicking on anything in any email, because they're afraid they're going to be phished again, you know?
Yeah.
And so they've got a real problem. You know, not only are people staying away from the stores, but now they're even afraid to open their emails.
Well, but, you know, also look at how many people that you guys probably each know, like I do, who have been reluctant to really do a lot in e-commerce and are freaked out about being in a coffee shop doing anything that, you know, requires any kind of security whatsoever.
We know him as Steve Borsch.
That's yeah, right. Talking but, about. Yeah. But no, but seriously, I'll just talk about my older sister. She now will absolutely, positively never buy anything online. She is so freaked out about this Target thing. Yeah. And she's like, wow. Oh my God. She goes, you know, should I just like stop using credit cards altogether and just carry cash? I said, no, that's probably not a good idea. But,
Does that mean she won't go on Amazon or anything? This is good news for Best Buy then.
Yeah, it is. It is. She won't. Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. Cause Best Buy is, oh my gosh, they're having some issues.
Oh, they took another 9% drop on the shares yesterday.
Oh, geez.
Now they're only worth $8.4 billion, and Dropbox was just announced they're at a $10 billion valuation. So Dropbox is worth more than Best Buy by a long shot right now.
Wow. That's incredible. Well, yeah. And the CEO, Hubert Joly, had a town hall meeting for employees this past week, and that was written up, I think, in Twin Cities Business Journal, and gave people warm and fuzzies that were still on track. And didn't he do something, Tim, with Wall Street too? Come out with some talk about that?
Yeah, it was called "It's Just a Bump in the Road."
There we go.
There's your quote. Yeah, there's the
substantial
money quote,
bump.
Right?
Yeah,
well, it's you know, if you're going to match price with Amazon, you're going to take a real hit in your earnings. And that's basically what happened. And the sales weren't as high as what the Wall Street expected.
Yeah,
right.
So they lost 30% on Monday.
They've taken him to the woodshed. You know, it's not a bump on the road. It's a major pothole.
Yeah,
like several feet deep.
They'll probably be down like 40% of where they were, in the short term. But if they're able to figure out how to compete, and they made a lot of progress in making that customer experience in the store a lot better than it used to be. So
it always comes down to is it enough at the right time? I mean,
did you guys ever hear my story about buying my iPhone in the store?
No.
My iPhone 5S, you know, which wasn't that long ago. What was that? That's only two and a half, three months ago at the most. You know, yeah, they may have improved the experience, but, oh, man, the comparison to buying something in the Apple store was still amazingly poor, you know. The lady that was helping me made me wait while other people interrupted her and other people working. How do I do this? How do I do that? And it's like, okay, I got to get going here. Could you please like just finish my transaction? And I swear to God, this happened three times. And then she even left me for another customer who walked up. And I thought, what the hell? You know, could you like deal with me and get my thing done before you, you know, it's like, these are like simple sort of customer service types of things. Well, and I think she was like the manager of the department.
Well, so the issue is apparently, because there was only one blog post, and this guy kind of had a halfway decent analysis, but he said that the average time to buy a phone through Best Buy, an iPhone that is, through Best Buy was an hour and 15 minutes.
Oh my Lord.
And yeah, mine was close to that.
And it was 10 minutes at the Apple store.
There you go.
Oh my Lord.
It's all because of their internal systems and how they're hooked up to the mobile carriers and the APIs they've used, I guess. And so it's their own internal systems, and that's the problem.
Well, see, that wasn't so much of a problem to me, but the service I was getting from the clerk or whatever you call her, the manager, you know, was just kind of horrid, you know.
Yeah.
And I thought, why?
Were you at the Best Buy at the big box store or at the mobile store?
I was at Eden Prairie, the big box Eden Prairie store. And the only reason I was there is they offered me an unbelievable trade-in on my 4S. I think I told you.
Yep.
I ended up paying, didn't I get, my trade-in was worth damn near as much as what the iPhone 5S was.
Right.
I hardly had to pay anything. So I thought, okay, I'm going there, baby. I thought it was better than I could get at the Apple store. but I paid for it.
Nothing's free, Graham. Nothing's free.
In the wait time, you know. Oh God, it was painful. But I found my funky wooden case while I was there, which I paid $40 for, which I've never paid that much ever for a case.
You really like to be able to say I've got a Woody.
Yeah.
Don't you?
Oh, yeah.
That's why he's got that Woody wagon.
You got that Woody car, and now you got a Woody iPhone case. And
I am Woodied all the time, baby.
I've got a Woody. Oh, man.
Yeah. You know, many people wonder why we talk so much about Woodies here. Anyway, it's also on the positive side. So the positive news, you know, one of our acquaintances has been getting a lot of really good press this week. And that's Zach Spala and the folks over.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there was an article from Fast Company on the failed Kickstarter might be your key to success. And then he also weighed in on the Nest deal and their firm actually even mocked up a Nest using Spark. So.
Well, they didn't just mock it up. It actually works.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
They prototyped it. Yeah.
Yeah. And
it's very prototypey. It looks kind of bad.
Well, it does, but.
Yeah, but it's solid wood, dude.
But it doesn't have any of the algorithms.
It's Woody.
It doesn't have the algorithms that really make the Nest a Nest. I mean, it is a thermostat that you can turn the dial and make the thing go up and down.
Right. Right. It's not a learning thermostat
Nest. It took a day, you guys. Come on.
Oh, I know. It's amazing. It was a great PR stunt.
Oh, I think so too. Well, but also they talk in there about how they're not comparing it head to head with the Nest after building it for one day, and that, you know, things always start out kind of janky and unfinished, and they threw it into open source. And the thing that people need to really kind of glom onto when you think about this is Clayton Christensen, the Harvard Business School professor that wrote Innovator's Dilemma and Innovator's Solution. And he talked about how disruption goes through three phases. It's crappy, so nobody pays attention. It's less crappy, so the early adopters start to use it. And when it hits good enough, that's when everybody starts to buy it.
Right.
And so this could definitely go through that same phase. It's just that Nest is going to do a lot of other things, as evidenced by their carbon monoxide detector and fire detector and so on. Smoke detector.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, which is already out there available for purchase. Is the carbon monoxide detector available for purchase yet?
I don't know about that.
I haven't heard of that one in the store yet, but yeah, isn't the big thing though with Google buying Nest that Nest was always a closed system and Google's always about open systems?
Yep. Yeah, so, that's one of the big things. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where Spark is, in the open camp, right?
Yep.
So, you know,
I was at the Cocoa Uptown location when, I actually had a meeting with the guys over at Spark. And, after our meeting, I'm hanging out at Cocoa doing some work. And Zach comes wandering over and said, "Hey, Google just bought Nest for $3.6 billion. And he was very happy. And I said, "So what does that mean to you?" I said, "Well, it means that, everybody's serious about this Internet of Things deal." So
validation, baby.
It's validation, baby. So he was incredibly happy. So,
It
is validation. And it really does kind of focus on that whole Internet of Things space and how the opportunities are going to starting to be a little bit more abundant. I think it's great. Zach is, I should point out that Zach's star of many blog posts and articles will be speaking at Mobile March, by the way. So,
good,
cool. Thought I'd throw that in there, a little plug for the Mobile March there.
Yeah.
Say that story that Julio did on the local IoT companies was good, that blog post, but he just kind of mentioned the startups. He didn't mention like Digi.
Yeah.
Diddy, but we've talked about Digi a lot in the past, right, Steve?
Yeah, and they're doing very well.
Yeah, they are. So, by the way, I have a future guest possibility relating to that. Not a Digi employee, but an architect that worked with them on their system, who I think would be fascinating. He's even written a book. So we'll talk about that in the future. I won't name him at this point, but I think he'd be open to coming on and talking about how he helped them architect that whole thing.
Well, you know what I find
fascinating.
You know what I find interesting is SmartThings. I just bought a couple of more lamp modules, and
I'm
hooking stuff up. And
I was telling this guy this. That I'm talking about you, Steve. And I'm surprised you haven't met this guy, because he's got Apple connections.
They really should come over to your house and just say thanks for the fact that you've bought everything they produce.
Well, okay. So at any rate, the thing that I wanted to mention is, even though my hub had firmware update, I'm having issues having my phone connect as a presence device. And I don't know if you guys know, but the SmartThings hub, just like most of these Internet of Things hubs, do in fact connect up to a server over the Internet. And so that creates some latency in switching. So if you walk by a motion sensor, it has to talk to the server, and then the server talks to the hub, and then it reacts. So that can take, you know, a couple seconds. Which isn't a big deal unless you're like me walking into the mudroom and you want a light to turn on immediately.
Well, what's the hub do? I thought that was all in the server in the hub.
Well, I mean, the hub works with the phone app, but it does keep a log. But if you're doing anything sophisticated with an app, it will talk to the server, and it logs everything. So anyway, I began to think, all right, so let's say I set up my phone as a presence device, so as I'm walking around the house, I can trigger things. But that means that my whereabouts and my whereabouts in the house are going to be logged at SmartThings in their hub. I mean, that's why they call themselves Physical Graph Corporation, because it's all about the physical graph, about how things are all connected and how you're interacting with them. And that kind of gave me pause.
Tracking, baby.
Well, yeah. I mean, what if the NSA says, hey, we only want metadata about where everyone is at any given moment. So not only are we grabbing the mobile device stuff, but now we've subpoenaed SmartThings and others to be able to get their logs. So we know Steve Borsch is at his house, and he happens to be sitting right now in his home office. So that's where the sharpshooters are. No, I'm kidding.
Steve Borsch entered his mudroom at 2:09 p.m.
That's right. Going into his garage. Yes, he's recycling, so that's good. Oh,
he gets
my gosh.
A brownie point.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the NSA, who watched or listened or read about Obama's speech on NSA phone surveillance?
Who didn't?
Yeah. I did.
Who didn't?
Okay.
We all did.
Well, we'll put a link in the show notes about it, but it really didn't say much other than focusing on phone surveillance.
Uh-huh.
So what did you guys think?
Not much.
I mean, I think that the president, the administration, the country as a whole, finds itself in sort of a rock and a hard place, is that we want to have early detection on covert actions, but at the same time, we don't want to give anybody access to find out what those covert actions are. So it's it's very tough for the, I think the most important thing to point out is that I don't think anybody was happy necessarily with what the president announced as far as changes in the NSA program.
Yeah.
There were some concessions, not many. I mean, the fact of the matter is that all of this, as we speak specifically to phone data, all this phone data is, every intention is still to collect it in mass. It's just a matter of where is it stored. And that's really sort of, to me, semantics. It's still being collected. It's just not easily accessible without a court order.
Well, just the phone metadata.
Yeah.
Well, right. And they don't know where it's going to be stored, and they don't know who's going to be storing it and who the third party is and all of that. And I found a link that I'm going to put in the show notes. It's about It's called A Running List of What We Know the NSA Can Do So Far.
Yeah.
And what's interesting about it is it goes through all the stuff. You know, it can spy on foreign leaders' cell phones. It can tap underwater fiber optic cables, you know, blah, blah, blah. It can access your smartphone app data. And there's a link next to each one so you can go in and you can actually read the article if you want. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really fascinating because even the Guardian's NSA page that links to all their stories is kind of daunting to get through. I mean, if you want to really get an understanding of the scope, the breadth of everything, it's kind of hard unless you really want to study it. And most people don't. So this is a good compiled list. But the big thing for me was the VentureBeat article about the tech companies that were really slamming Obama and the government about the limitations of what he's not doing.
Again, rocking a hard place.
Yeah.
What I find interesting is that, you know, this has been going on since the Bush administration, and Obama seems to be getting all the blame for this.
Yeah.
And I guess it's, you know, it's still on your watch kind of deal, but
it's very politically motivated. So, and that would happen, you know, we would blame the White House no matter what. Yeah. No matter who is president. Yeah. There would be a, which is again, what we do, we don't necessarily, we point fingers and blame. We don't fix it. So,
well, but a lot of people also are finally beginning to say, I was at a wake last night. And so I saw a lot of relatives my brother-in-law was saying, you know, my biggest concern is not President Obama or not the next president, but maybe the third one out that is a fascist who is gleeful about the fact that all this stuff's in place. And, you know, there's been so much push in the envelope on legality that it would be pretty easy to come in and start to push stuff around and become a fascist. Anyway,
we're closer than you think.
I know. Right? I know. It's frightening.
It is.
And
I'm not scared.
I mean, they're still collecting this data. I mean, they
all
can
of
make
it.
A decision. So let's go 10 years in the future, right? They're collecting this data. They'll continue to collect this data. And then maybe 10 years from now, someone makes a change and they'll go back through and start prosecuting people, you know?
Yeah. Well, not only that, but I keep a 256-bit encrypted disk image.
Of course you
For the Mac. No, just come on. Don't tease me.
I do 128-bit encryption personally. But.
Well, AES is...
of course you do. Yeah. Well, I bury ammo and I have a bomb shelter.
Well, but here's why, is because we have a shared Dropbox with the kids. And inside this disk image is... you know, there are documents in there. There's all the stuff that the kids would need if we get, Michelle and I are on a plane and the plane goes down and the kids have to figure out what the hell to do now. Everything's in there, you know, access to this and that and documents about things that they need to know. And so I obviously encrypt it as a disk image so that Dropbox, you know, is inherently not secure. They don't secure and encrypt the files. And so that way it can be encrypted. The kicker is the NSA and others are working on quantum computers that will make 256-bit decryption so simple that they're going to be able to forensically go back, like you say, Tim, in all that data and pick it apart, you know, open up that disk image and see what's in there.
Yeah, what I find chilling is that all of this data is being collected.
Yeah.
And I know that people say, oh, if you're not doing anything wrong, no problem.
No,
yeah,
it's right. Yeah, but it's clearly a violation of rights.
It is, and things can be twisted. And you're right that, let's say, a fascist regime takes over, they can, like, twist things all around, just like they did in the East Germany Stasi back in the Cold War.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Well, I'm glad I'm not the only one because I get crap from people telling me that I got a tinfoil hat on And then I'm paranoid.
Who would give you crap about that? Oh. All of us.
Well, I'll tell you what, as a lay student of history, and I haven't read as much about the uprise of the Soviet Union, what Stalin did and all that, as I have about Germany, because I had ancestry in Germany. But, you know, you look at all this stuff and pretty much everybody just sort of goes along with it because of stuff like they're saying now, like even Obama said, which is it's all about terrorism. You know, we have to keep Americans safe. It's like, you know, bullshit. Come on.
Yeah. You know what? I have no inside information and whatever, but I bet you that at some point, most of what all this stuff will come back to is people making money on inside information. Because yes. Can you imagine the amount of inside information into the stock market these people have at the NSA?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
That's where the big money is.
Well, you know, we talk about storing all this data that's collected, all this metadata, you know, separate, you know, some private enterprise or, you know, some neutral, there's no neutral parties. You know, if I win the right to keep all of this metadata, you know, am I really going to say, you know, I got all the information I ever need right there. I could really make a lot of money if I just sold a little bit of it or a new little bit of it. And it's creepy.
It just
shouldn't be collected at all. But at the same time, we yearn for, we'll be the first ones to say, if there's some sort of terrorist attack or some sort of, you know, covert mission that goes awry, it's like, how come we didn't do anything about it?
Well, now I'm all pissed off, so let's talk about net neutrality.
Yeah, there we go.
Because that's going well, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, but first, I'm adding to my list of things to worry about. I'm writing it down right now. A future fascist state.
As previewed on Innovate.
Future fascist state.com. I'm going for it, baby.
Oh, God.
It's true. No, stop.
Net neutrality. But
net neutrality, you know. Tim did allude to that, and that suffered a wee bit of a setback.
Well, I'm confused. Did it or did it not?
I don't know. You know, that's the
thing.
It's
hard to tell.
It is hard to tell.
Yeah.
I guess we'll know if it's legal that if the providers of internet access start to monkey around with Netflix and Hulu and all the other streaming services.
Right.
And if they start to do that, then something's up.
It's interesting that net neutrality, it, you know, gets so much attention, yet we probably use our mobile and the cellular access much more to gather data these days. You got to wonder, you know, that's always being manipulated.
Oh, I know.
That's true.
It's throttling and they're picking, you know, who gets what all the time. But yet, you know, when it comes to, hey, wait a minute. You mean you're going to regulate my Playboy channel? Wait a minute.
Well, so in four states, Comcast has started to alert customers about the 300 gigs. If they go over 300 gigs, they'll be given another 50 for the time being. And then they're going to begin charging for that. They're gearing up for it. And so, you know, it's gonna happen. I mean, if this net neutrality thing continues its current path, it's gonna continue to be an issue. So,
well, that has nothing to do with net neutrality. That's just, you know, charging more for people that use more service. If they were to affect third party services across the internet, like Netflix, and make their service, you know, a better experience. Then that would be a violation of net neutrality.
Yeah.
Right. Or say Spotify doesn't work across their network, but their own music service works.
Right.
Stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
An unfair business advantage.
Yeah. Especially when, you know, there's not a lot of choices to find access. I mean, in most places there's two or maybe three, but that's still not a ton. It's not like even like buying gas where you've got, you know, I don't know, you know, dozens of different places you can go to buy gas, you know?
Yeah. Well,
the thing that I found interesting about reading about this is, you know, all bandwidth is paid for by consumers. It's really just a question of how they're going to pay for it, you know. And I mean, I, for one, think, you know, monthly subscription prices for Netflix are only going to go up. Let's face it, you know. Isn't that what's going to happen here? I mean, for $7.99 a month, we're getting a whole hell of a lot versus, you know, what we pay the cable companies, you know, 100 or more a month. So, you know, isn't that what's going to happen? We can
absolutely expect, but I would pay $20 a month for Netflix.
Oh, hell yes, yeah. I would too. Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't think that there's a huge problem with them raising their price.
No.
But if they can't compete because, you know, cable access providers are blocking or throttling or whatever, you know, their stream, so that the service itself is, you know, doesn't work very well, and that's a big problem. Then it's not even worth $7.99.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think what's interesting is this, you know, sponsored data that AT&T and others are talking about, you know, advertiser supported models that where it won't affect your monthly allotment of data. You know, we're going to be seeing more and more of that, you know, advertiser supported models. So that's what I think is coming, or already is, I guess.
Well, I mean, something's got to give. It's just that what I would hope for would be, you know, at least some decent parity with the rest of the universe in terms of internet speed, because the United States is 35th on the list for internet speed. It's like, I mean, come on.
Yeah, we got to open that up.
Yeah.
I also read where Google is already paying. You know, they're supposedly the net neutrality supporters, but they're actually already paying certain overseas operators to deliver Google services to users without triggering the user's data limits. So, you know, they kind of speak out of both sides of their mouth on this.
Huh.
Yeah.
I had not heard that.
That's why I put that article link in the opinion piece, How the Net Neutrality Lobby is Like a Frog. It's interesting reading.
Gotcha.
Do you boil the frog?
It doesn't go into that. It's about what frogs eat. I guess they eat things that are moving around them, but they would starve to death if they were surrounded by food and it wasn't moving. But wow, I don't totally understand the analogy here to net neutrality, but this guy's a big thinker, so, you know, he kind of leaves me behind on some of his writings.
Huh.
Holman Jenkins, Jr. Wow. Holman Jenkins. It doesn't have to call me Johnson. Holman Jenkins, Jr.
I'll meet you at the club.
You know, you should not do voiceover acting. Grandma, just a hint.
Thank you.
Oh, God. So I'm assuming you put this in, Tim, about the Shopkick.
Yeah.
Is doing a 100-store iBeacon trial.
Yeah, we tried we talked about iBeacon earlier, and here's a, you know, major chain that's doing some stuff. Macy's is also doing some stuff with Shopkick that are using iBeacon to deliver promotional messages and whatnot. So it's here, it's coming. It's not just at the Apple Store. So it'll be interesting to see this roll out. I just put it in there. This is a, hey, here's a follow-up kind of thing.
Right.
I was at the Twin Cities iPhone Developers meetup on was that Thursday night, and Kurt McIntyre from Vector Digital did a presentation on iBeacon and BLE, and it was interesting. You know, nothing huge or earth-shattering to be learned, but other than, you know, how the technology works, and then also some coding to help iPhone developers understand how to incorporate it into their app. But it's very much on the move. Very much on the move.
Yeah, I just met him yesterday for coffee. He chased me down, and I suggested he talk with Shivani Khanna over at Sport Engine, who was doing something with iBeacons. You know, and I guess what most people forget, and I think we put this link in the last podcast show notes, is that it's much more than about indoor you know, GPS or indoor location. It goes way beyond that. So retail applications are interesting, but they're only one.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think everybody sees this as a way to say, hey, a deal right now in aisle three or whatever.
Is, right.
You know, this sort of nirvana for
shopping.
But it's really so much more. It's not just – it's a trigger. It's triggering an action. It's not just sending a message. It's triggering an action. So there's going to be opportunities like crazy to use the technology, whether it's, iBeacon specifically or just Bluetooth low energy. There's going to be some great opportunities out here.
Mm-hmm. Well, yep. I wanted to, I just tossed something into the show notes for anybody that has a blog or has a website and you're looking at doing e-commerce, the stakes are going up because of all the hacking and insecurity of various platforms or the inability for a lot of people to secure their Drupal, WordPress, Joomla sites, or whatever they happen to be using. And there's something called PCI compliance, which is the credit card security standard. And if you don't have a PhD in computer science, good luck trying to implement the standard, right?
Yep.
And so it's been very, very, very difficult to adhere to security standards. And as a consequence, what a lot of people have done is they've implemented various solutions that use PayPal, for example, or Stripe and others, but PayPal has been around the longest, to jump out, to have a buy me now button and jump out and make your transaction payment on PayPal. The problem is, just like with shopping cart abandonment, when somebody jumps out to another page, especially now with all the stuff about hacking and insecurity at Target and yada yada, is people get freaked out and the shopping cart abandonment rate is over 40%.
Yep.
And so PayPal, this was in VentureBeat, but PayPal had actually done a little pay in the widget example quite a long time ago, back in, I think, 2006. And they finally are rolling out what they're calling an in-context checkout experience. And I've looked at a demo, I've gone through it, and I haven't actually implemented one yet, but I am just fascinated by this, because basically what it does is it works like a light box. It pops up and you're actually doing the transaction in there, and the SSL is set up in that widget, for lack of a better term, and you actually make the transaction and make your payment, put in your credit card information and everything, and the transaction goes through PayPal, but you never leave the website. And this is exactly what the web needs. It's exactly what e-commerce needs. Now, a lot of people have issues with PayPal, as do I in some respects, but conceptually, this is going to set the bar in a way that I think it's going to really explode e-commerce in a positive way in terms of growth and so forth. So...
just what Best Buy needs to hear. No, not really.
No, I know. I know.
No, they actually, did you see their growth of their e-commerce business?
Yes.
Was 20, more than double over the previous years? That was a big stat. Grew 23%. Previous year, it only grew 10%. So, e-commerce is where it's at, baby.
Yeah, that's very impressive. Well, anyway, nice. So I just wanted to toss that in because it's... it really potentially is going to really help, especially small to mid-sized businesses.
Yep.
So
that's the future, baby.
The future, baby.
Yeah.
It is the small to mid-size.
Yeah.
SMBs.
All right.
For those in the know.
What's coming up as far as events,
No. We have to say one. We have to just talk about one more thing because it just blew me away.
What's
and
that
was this thing about ATM machines and the software they're running. Who put this in here?
This is a Steve security.
Oh my God! Running Windows XP.
95% of ATMs are running Windows XP.
Oh my God!
When is this deadline?
It's
that
this
they
summer.
Have to upgrade
by this summer, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's got to be a major headache for them, huh?
Here's a business opportunity. You could go and you'd be in charge of defragging ATMs. How about
oh
that?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Well, you know, Alex and I, we used to go around on these. We had these dad and son adventures every year. And I got to tell you that when we'd fly somewhere and we'd take pictures of ATM machines or kiosks or signage boards that had Windows operating system errors or the, you know, they'd have the blue screen of death and there'd be right. some error message there.
The DOS prompt was there or something was showing up.
Oh my God.
It's actually God. April 8th. So if April 9th, you're at your ATM and something's up, just
hey, wait a minute. Give me back my card.
You know what it is.
Control alt delete. Yeah.
And what's funny is that they're upgrading to Windows 7. They're not going to Windows 8.
Oh, of course not.
Yeah.
Yeah. That
at least they're not upgrading to Vista.
I think an ATM with like the Metro interface would be
that would be very nice. Yes,
it would be very good. It would
Say Metro. Don't say.
Oh, okay. With the Windows 8 interface.
There you go. There you go.
Modern interface.
The modern interface.
Well, you know, I got to. I was going to say
there are local businesses that could be benefiting from upgrading all these ATMs. There's a company called Field Solutions that sends out technicians to. Do things on ATMs. That's one thing they do. That could be one huge freaking contract. Well, it would be multiple contracts with multiple ATM networks. But Field Solutions is one. Field Nation is another one that probably benefits from that kind of action. Sending out trusted technicians that have all been vetted, you know, because you don't want to send some guy who's going to open the thing up, clean out the money, and go home, you know.
Right. Yeah, like, or have Boris and Natasha show up, and
right.
And Rocky and Bullwinkle have to come in.
Put his to make big trouble on. For Moose and Squirrel.
Anyway, go ahead, Steve. I didn't mean to jump on you.
No. Just that I was just going to say Wells Fargo. Has made some really major strides in their ATM machines. You know, you can have receipts emailed to you. You can just shove your checks in there and make a deposit. It scans them in and puts them right in. And it really is great. And I can't believe that's running on Windows XP.
Oh, it probably isn't.
Yeah.
But what did you say? 90-some percent.
95%, according to the Bloomberg article.
Yeah.
Wow. But that other 5%, that other 5% is running on, what do you think, Linux?
Either that or Windows 7 already, because that's what people are upgrading to.
Yeah, yeah. Some of them have upgraded. Yeah,
yeah.
But probably few.
All the Wells Fargo's, because those are the best interface that I've seen in ATMs.
Hmm. Wow. Okay, Phil. Upcoming events, buddy boy.
Oh, it's me now. Oh, sure.
Sure. No, it's a lot of pressure.
You just think
I'm
standing around waiting for you to get to my events.
Well, let's just talk about the new ones then. So you said that.
Wait. You got to talk about Spark. You guys talked about that last week.
Yeah. You weren't here. That's right.
Yeah. January 22nd.
Yeah.
No, I was here, but I have something to say about that.
What's that?
Apparently is being co-sponsored or in part by Bring Me the News.
Yeah.
And remember the tweet chat I was on, Phil, that you just missed out on because you got back to Coco a little after it ended?
Yeah.
Well, the nice lady who coordinated that, Erica, who you know, I have yet to meet,
right.
She's offering us up 2 tickets to that event.
All right, everybody.
Cool.
So
jump ball.
I got one. You guys fight for the other one.
Instagram just helps himself to the one.
Because she was like laying a little reward on us for participating.
Oh,
in
that was nice.
In the tweet chat. And these are $250 tickets.
Wow.
So I said, yeah, but do we get to show up for the pre-cocktail party? That's the question.
That's the important thing.
It starts at 5:30, cocktails, but the event doesn't start till 6:30.
You don't get Graham Thickens unless there's booze.
Got to be food and drink.
Food and drink, yeah.
Food and drink. So Spark is happening on the 22nd at 5:30. You want to check that out. Beta MN is scheduled for the 30th, and there are tickets still available for that. Now Graham has craftily put on the calendar here that everybody should save February 5th on their calendar. It's a teaser. So some sort of notable VC is coming to town. Now, would this notable VC coming to town actually have –
money?
Actually capitalized somebody, or is this?
Oh, yeah, he's okay. Capitalized someone in the Twin Cities, so right. That's why he's here.
Good deal.
And people, you know, startups and founders everywhere are, you know, salivating at the opportunity to get at this guy. I'll let the details come right. up, but it's Seth Levine of the Founder Group. Now, okay, there you go. I just blew the big secret.
But, oh, it is. Oh.
Yeah, he's a great guy. I've known him for years, and he has a Minnesota connection. But, you know, it's harder than hell to get these guys to come here, but he finally had to come here for a board meeting, so for the startup that he funded.
Nice. Very nice.
And that is leadpages.net, which
oh, sure.
we heard about. Yeah, we talked about ago. That. Yeah. Right.
Yep. Interesting.
And then there's the border-to-border broadband on the 4th and 5th at River Center. This is something new. The Blandin organization's putting this on, right?
Yeah, well, you know, Blandin works. Ann Tracy has done just a tremendous amount of work, and she blogs and runs all this stuff for Blandin with respect to broadband. And it's about making sure that outside the urban core, Minnesota, has access to high-speed broadband. And so she tracks everything from the task force recommendations to what municipalities are doing. You know, when Montevideo went and put in their own, fiber, and there was all kinds of court battles and stuff going on. I mean, she was tracking that. And so this event really is geared for any community that's outside the metropolitan area, but everybody's welcome, and it looks like a good event.
Good. Yeah, and then I think we've got I don't think there's anything else new on the calendar, so you can take a peek at that.
Well, that Capital Code. Who put that on there?
I did.
That looks really interesting.
Mark Ritchie just came out,
which is an open data jam. Okay.
Yep. To get the developers into. I guess, to help them create stuff.
Yeah, big data. It's a big data jam.
It's a big data jam. Be there, aloha. So check that out.
But no food and drink, so no Graham
Thickens. No Graham Thickens.
Yeah, Graham
hey, wait a minute. Peanut butter goes with any jam. Is this about all about government data, or what is this?
Public data.
Public data.
The Secretary of State, Richie, in his office, is put this together. It's on February the 22nd.
Yep.
And it's going to be at Coco Uptown.
It is.
Yep.
It's another reason to put it in the upcoming events.
That's right. And then there's some mobile event happening.
Yeah. What's this one about, Phil? Mobile something?
Mobile stuff.
Mobile stuff. Is it in February?
It's in March, as a matter of fact.
Oh,
you know, it's March. Called Mobile March.
Oh.
Get your tickets now, everybody. Get your tickets now.
Now, this year, are you going to give away $100 bills or just mobile devices?
I don't know. You know, it's we have such fast resources. It's really hard to say.
Okay, I'll just
check. Could be even a T-shirt. You never know.
All right. Yeah,
exactly. So we'll expect to see everybody there. So.
Yep.
There you go.
Good.
There's, you know, lots of happening. You know, things are picking up as it cools down outside. There's a lot more going on inside. So, and we'll probably talk a lot more about it next week on
the Minivate Gang Podcast.
Yes, indeed.
Take care, everybody.
Have a good week.
Here, I can't find light. Something's going on here. Feeling just ain't right. I'm going down to the river. I'm gonna wash away all my fears. Something's going on here, making me afraid. Something's going on here, taking me away. I'm going down to the river. I'm gonna wash away all my left the high.
Something's going on here. No longer can I run. Something's going on here. It's time to have some fun. I'm going down to the river. I'm going to wash away all my fears. And I want to know you. And I want to feel inside. And I want to show you. Got nothing left to hide. Left the high.